Happy Indianimation Day.
Yeah, yes, sir. On X, if you will.
Oh yeah, my favorite app, X.
Favorite social media, X.
It's my favorite app in general. It's my favorite website, my favorite app. Not just social media. I love X. X is my favorite.
Triple X. Ice Cube.
And, way too much.
Who's in State those movies? It's like Cube and like Vin Diesel and like.
Yeah, I seen the first. Isn't it Vin Diesel in one and Cube in another?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's the first one's Vin Diesel, and then the second one's Ice Cube, right?
Does Vin Diesel not return for the rest of the Triple X's? Is it just?
Are there more than two? Did they do another one?
I thought there were three, but there might only be two.
Well, here's some advice I have for you. Don't search XXX movies.
Fuck. I walked you right into that, man. My bad.
That's what
people were saying about that app, though. It's like if people didn't know what
Elon
that was.
Elon Musk is stupid, and now he's like, oh yeah, now we're gonna have X videos instead of Twitter videos. Oh, you
X
fool!
Videos, you a, fool! Man. Come on, man. Any self-awareness? On the X app on Twitter or whatever, you can search the hashtag Indie Animation Day and you will find a slew of projects, a bunch of people posting their projects. It is noon today right now as we're recording this. And it's
Eastern time.
and there's a lot of people already posting like a lot of projects I've never seen before. There's something out there for everyone. I encourage you guys to go and like search those out or whatever. It's a lot of cool shit. Show some love, support. Even if you don't got no money, you can just retweet it and show other people. Like that's just the important part. You know,
check them out. Give it a support these creators who are, you know, it's tough to make stuff in the studio system. So it's really cool to see people. Well, especially tough to make unique things in the studio system. It feels like they don't green light all these unique POVs, and so it's cool to see people take it upon themselves. It's cool to see some of these indies go on a massive success, and you know, hopefully we can get just more and more of them to be successful. That freaking Lackadaisy Kickstarter going is
ridiculous.
Still going nuts.
I feel like that shit should have like national coverage, because what sense does that make? How do they make $1 million in a week? That's not even, how is this not like picked up by like CNN? You know what I mean?
It's at 1.3 million now. I don't think it's going to hit their full, stretch goal. I bet it'll hit 1.5 and get the mini episodes because that's more content. 2 million, it's Blu-ray, which I want so bad. God. Come on. We just need 700,000 more dollars.
We only 700,000 more dollars.
But it is like just an absolute incredible feat to have reached 1 million in a few days. It was under a week. It was like a few
under
days.
A week.
And we're going to get that full 5-episode season of Lackadaisy, which is the show I think is really cool. Also, I don't know if you guys have seen Lackadaisy and want to, that's one to support. Obviously, should be others you should support because that has its money. But there are some crazy cool goals or some crazy cool bonuses if you subscribe to Lackadaisy or if you donate to them. I did the tier that's going to get me to all the hardcover books that have all of the webcomics in them. I'm stoked.
Oh, that's hard.
It's sick. I'm so excited. It's going
to
be
that
cool.
That sounds like some dope shit to just have on your shelf, to be honest with you.
Exactly. It has two books full of all the webcomics, plus I think a book that's like it's like an art book for the pilot, basically. And so I'm pretty stoked for that. But you know, go find some cool indie projects that you like that speak to you, and retweet them, throw them some money if you can, spread the awareness, and you know, cool new things are going to get made right now.
That's how they get made.
They are not they're not doing it how they used to do it.
Yeah, they're not doing it anywhere else. And like just to your point, like a lot of people have like cool like goals. I think too, like, especially if you listen to podcasts like these, I think you're really interested, possibly really interested in like how the sausage is made. And that's what's cool about following these projects, because like people will post like animatics, or storyboards, or like pencil tests and stuff like that. If you if you're a patron on Aaron Long's Patreon for Sublow and Tangy Mustard, which I am, they have Aaron posts every episode. He posts like an art book essentially for the episode, and it's just like a sea of like sketches, and like you can watch them figure characters out, like color schemes, and like, you know what I mean, like that kind of shit. It's all cool shit, and it's all personal shit, because it's just a lot of people just kind of going like, I want to make this, I'm gonna do it my way. So yeah, happy indie animation day, hell everybody. Yeah.
go show some projects some love. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what should we get rolling, start talking about the show?
Yeah, the show.
Should we start the show?
You know what my favorite thing is like whenever somebody new is just like, man, why the fuck does it take them 20 minutes to get to, you're new here, okay,
yeah, I get it. Also, like, any good podcast does that, in my opinion.
We're just following the model, you guys.
I don't know, man. If you're only here for cartoons, then I don't know if you're doing podcasts right. You gotta be here for the banter,
for the friendship, for the fellas. Yeah, for the guys. That's what it's really all about. It's about dudes.
All right. It's about dudes. Let's cue the theme song.
Yeah. All right.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a Hilleberger family. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally same. And diverse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
Yeah, that's bananas.
As rough.
What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. This is the podcast for dudes. I'm just kidding. The podcast about adult animation. You probably know the deal by now. I am your co-host, Johnny. I'm here with my fellow co-host, Tariq. Tariq, how is your day thus far? This is the earliest we've potentially ever recorded.
It's going pretty. How's your morning? I should ask.
I'm tired. Sorry. I woke up an hour ago. No, it's fine. No, I'm doing great. I'm going to get my day started real early, or I'm going to take a nap after this. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I respect both decisions. While you have my full support.
I'm really bad at taking naps, but like I'm tired, and I think it's gonna help. I also got my video posted this morning already, so like even though it was 2 days late, so we'll see what happens. But it might be a nap morning.
Those are like it's a toss up. I'll either like feel really great about having a nap morning, or I'll feel like shit because I'm like, damn. Why didn't I do anything? It's either or. It's always a toss-up.
I feel that. All right. We are, of course, here to talk about Futurama. I love watching Tony run behind you.
I know, man. This my is dog great. Is just all over this podcast it's great. Episode. Big fan.
Normally, it's my dog just hanging out right here, begging me to pay attention to her while now, I'm recording.
Yeah, now we're gonna see my dog do the same thing.
Hell yeah. Maybe they can be friends one day.
Yeah, potentially.
So we normally obviously talk about adult animation. Previously we've done it one season at a time. We are now talking about the new season of Futurama one episode at a time. Much more manageable workload. And so far so good. This is episode 4. Although, you know what, I feel like I don't know. Part of me feels like people are getting tired of it. I feel like the audience has fallen off the more of a week two.
Okay, I was looking at that too. I think that it might have to do with the episodes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that like whenever they do something that like gets people like actively talking again, then it will be like probably like a spike or something. But these are just kind of like these last two have just kind of been like Futurama just episodes. Like they're just like just episodes. You know what I mean?
And yeah, so, we'll see how this one goes.
There's some like lore shit going on with this one, so potentially more people might care.
It's a follow up. People might we'll see. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And yeah, so, you know, then we have also, we've teased this before, but we've got a little bit of a format change coming up. So if you're, you know, looking for us to cover new, different shows, just stay tuned.
Yeah, man.
It's going to be great. We're going to start rolling on that behind the scenes real soon. It's going to be very exciting. Get stoked about it. Okay. Get fucking stoked.
Yeah. That's your call to action is to get stoked.
Yeah, click the get stoked button right now. man. All right, so this is Parasites Regained. When the episode titles for the season were revealed, this felt like the one that most people were, this and Let Children of Lesser Bog were the ones people were like talking about. And this was also not like an official reveal. There's a website called the Electronic like Identifying Registry or whatever, and it's literally like the unions have to register TV episodes, or the studios have to register like the metadata for their TV episodes in this database, and people can find it. And that's how people found all the titles for the season. We've already got the titles for the next 10 episodes of Futurama too. We know them all. I know. But when that happened, everyone was like, Parasites Regained. That's sounds like a sequel. Obviously the episode that it is a sequel to is Parasites Lost, which, funny enough, that is a parody title of Paradise Lost, which is a book/poem by John Milton.
Okay.
It's an ancient poem, 17th century.
That old and then, shit.
Yeah, 1600s. And then it was actually followed by a poem called Paradise Regained. So like,
oh, they bodied just that. Okay.
Yeah. It's not like they're just following up the title of the last one and they're like, oh, Parasites Lost, Parasites Regained. They're both playing on poems by the same guy that followed one another. So
it's pretty
good. There's that. There's that. I've never read Paradise Lost or Paradise Regained. I have watched a trilogy of murder documentaries called Paradise Lost that are pretty good. You should watch those. Pretty good movies. Unrelated. So remind me how you felt about Parasites Lost in the classic run.
It's a classic episode. It's a great episode. I love that one. I
fucking love that episode.
It's not that much you can say. It's just like it's a classic Futurama episode. Like it's one of those.
I think it's in my top 10. I'm pretty sure in my ranked it was in my top
10. It is, I think, because I think I did that.
You edited it.
Yeah, I think I did that.
I needed so much help editing that freaking video. And then 9 days later, Futurama decided to announce, oh, we're coming back with new episodes.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, it's guys.
Ridiculous. It's
they did
it's,
this to me. They did it to
ridiculous.
Me.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I saw a name in the credits for this episode that I didn't recognize. It was written by, I forget the woman's name. Her last name's Williams.
Maya Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maya Williams.
And I didn't recognize her name from earlier era. So I like went to IMDb, wrote on like Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
And like shit like that, like producer and stuff. So it's cool. Because I don't know when they said they were getting new people, I imagined that they were getting like younger people. So I thought it was cool that they even like reached out to like even like.
So she did write a bit in the Comedy Central era. She wrote a couple.
Oh, okay.
She wrote the Da Vinci Code in the first run, and she wrote Assy Come Home, which we talked about recently. And she is also married to Patrick Verone. Futurama writer.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. They are a writing power couple.
Fuck what I'm talking about then. Yeah. Then.
Yeah. But, right. You know, I mean, like, dude, wrote on Fresh Prince. Like, that's in Mad TV, bunch of stuff.
Bad bunch of shit.
Also, another one of the, she looks like she went to Harvard.
She's adding to one. That statistic.
Yep, she's another okay. one of these well-educated Futurama writers.
Right, yeah.
And I think of her three episodes as my favorite. I like this one better than Assie. I like this one better. Comparably to the Da Vinci Code. Right off the bat, how do you feel about Parasite's Regained?
I feel similar to how I did last week, but just kind of I think the stuff that I enjoy in this one, I enjoy it more than I did the stuff that I enjoyed last week. Mm-hmm. But there's like the whole middle part where I'm like, I'm not even like, this is bad. I'm more just like a little like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like, once they get to the desert and they start doing all that. I've never seen a Dune film.
You never watched Dune.
This is not. But I knew that's what they were doing. But like,
I mean, yeah, obviously they made it real obvious that they're
very, very clear.
I've never read the Dune books. They're dense, and the way they're written, I can't wrap my head around. I'm going to try to get back into them at some point, but man, they're like the people who love Dune, love Dune, love Dune. Yeah, I have a friend who's Dune obsessive. I loved Denis Villeneuve's movie from a couple years ago. I'm really looking forward to the sequel. I think you should watch that movie. I think you'll like it.
I think I should too. My roommate, who I talk relentlessly to about movies, and is one of the people I trust when it comes to whether or not I'll enjoy something. I remember he left the theater and came to the house talking about he hated it. And that really? was like the only time I heard that. So that shocked me, but I still think I'll probably like, I'll give it a look.
It's really cool. It's a really cool movie. I think like one thing that I do understand, like the way people falsely accuse Across the Spider-Verse of being half a movie, Dune actually is half a movie.
Is it really? Okay.
because they adapted half the book. And so, it's great. It absolutely ends at a point where you're like, oh, I feel like this was just getting started. I mean? But it's still sick and it leaves you wanting more. And part two will come out either this year or next year, depending on strike stuff.
Is that true? Because they've been playing trailers. Is the release date up in the air?
It's supposed to come out this year. Studios, because of the strikes, are pushing movies back and blaming the strikes. It's really just them being
pussies.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Pussies. But you give everybody their fucking money. How about that?
There are rumors that Dune will get pushed back to next year because of that. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it does because it was like seen as a success, but it was, you know, it came out in the early theater opening after the pandemic. So it didn't make a ton of money. It just did really, and it came out on streaming like at the same time. So no one really knows if it's going to make money, but they did at least commit to let him do the second part, which is great. I would have been pissed if they didn't. But I think Dune is cool. It looks, just for how it looks, I think you'll dig it. It's beautiful.
Word.
Really sick movie. That being said, I didn't love how overt of a Dune thing they did here. And it's not even like it's the story itself is that overtly Dune. I just don't like the overt, like, we are Doomed Beatles.
I was going to, I thought I was going to ask how you felt about that, because I didn't like that either. And I don't know anything. But just the overt nudge of like, you get it, right? Just to make sure, this is what we're doing. Like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that.
Yep. That's exactly right. I find it annoying, especially because like I don't mind them doing something that's homage to another sci-fi classic. They do that a lot. Even Parasites Lost was in part a heavy homage to Fantastic Voyage with them shrinking down and going into Fry's body. But it's clear homage there. It's not, there's nothing about it where they're like, there's nothing about it where they're just like being like, wow, this voyage we're on sure is fantastic.
You know what I mean?
Although if the professor said that, that might be funny.
That's true. He's the only one that'll make that. Like if Fry says it, I roll my eyes. If Bender says it, I roll my eyes. But the professor can make that
professor,
funny.
Yeah, be pretty good.
Professor could have made the Doom shit funny if I'm keeping it 100. Like, yeah, I think he could have. Some funny voice.
So, okay. So, but let's talk. I am overall middling on this episode once again. Okay. I think it's, again, good, not great. I felt this, I felt this about every episode this season in different ways. The first one I thought was funniest. Second one I thought was most heartfelt. The last week I was like, decent, like regular normal ass Futurama episode. And this one, the first time I watched, I was kind of like, okay, like, a little bit overt on the Dune parody. When I rewatched, I grew to really appreciate a little bit more how they followed up Parasites Lost. Because I think there was an expectation of some people, maybe for me, maybe for other people who are other fans of the show, that this would be more of an overt sequel to Parasites Lost. And while it does have the worms, and that is a big part of the plot, this is more of a spiritual successor to Parasites Lost, in my opinion. And I think I've grown to appreciate that they opted, rather than just being like, the worms are back and they're making Fry smart again or whatever. Instead, they have them affect Nibbler differently. But the thing that makes this such a successor to the first is that it's about Leela's relationship with someone and how it changes because of the worms affecting them. And that's exactly what Parasites Lost is. And so I respect that they opted to kind of give us a whole new character dynamic and character relationship story based on this worm idea, rather than just being like, remember Parasites Lost, here it is again. So there are a lot of little details. I think in structure, this is almost, they structured it just like Parasites Lost. And I didn't really realize that until rewatch. It's like them figuring out something's wrong with Nibbler, shrinking down, going into the thing, thinking that they've come to a conclusion about it, regrowing, and then, Leela going back down for one last ditch effort, and the other one, it's Fry going back down in one last ditch effort. So I like the Nibbler Leela stuff for the most part in this episode. That's what I liked most.
Yeah. Like I really like, pretty much everything before the desert, I think is I like that shit. Like I like focusing in on Leela and Nibbler and their relationship. The fact that now like everybody knows Nibbler can talk. Let's use that to show like what relationship does Leela have with him, with his intelligence, that doesn't have to do with like the world ending, because that's usually what it's used for. When there's like a bunch of shit going, your pets are wilding. that's usually what it's used for, though. It's usually used, Nibbler's intelligence is usually used for like, like big story stuff or like end of the world, like that kind of thing. So it's nice to see them like go to the movies.
Yes.
And stuff like that. Like I like shit.
Totally.
Like that. I think that's cool. I think also it took four episodes, but I think Fry is like the real MVP of this episode because he is hilarious. Yeah. He has all of my favorite lines in this episode of Fry.
When he says, write them down. I feel like I didn't clock him as the funniest this episode. What are his lines you like the best?
I like when they're talking about movies with subtitles, and he says, when I'm at the movies, I don't want to look away from my phone. I think that's funny, even though it's like they got the iPhone thing, but whatever. I think that's funny.
I know. I was a little annoyed that he's looking at a phone.
Yeah, like a real phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like when he plays tic-tac-toe with Nibbler and he says the trick is to always be X, and Nibbler says, all right, you want to play? He says, okay, I'll be O. Yeah. I like that. When they're in the desert, they do that. There's like this fake out. One of the guys says, could he be the Quiznos Cadillac? Which is funny general. The Quiznos Cadillac is funny in general. And then like he turns around, zips up his pants. You hear this like heroic music. And she's like, no, that's not him.
Nah. I also love that slight lower angle of Fry as he's zipping.
I do too.
It's a funny. Great shot. I was thinking about that in this watch. I love that shot.
It's a good shot. It's a good shot.
Yeah, he is funny. That's some good stuff. There's one joke that they used in the trailer that I don't like, where he's like, sorry, I'm guys, flatty. I'm a flatty. Or
what is it? That's a dumb Fry line.
It is a dumb Fry thing. Yeah,
sorry,
right.
Guys.
Yeah, you're right. So some other ways that this paralleled Parasite's Lost that I enjoyed were how there's the scene. They do a scene at that cafe, same cafe that they do in Parasite's Lost. There's like the little cafe across the street from the building.
Whoa. Oh yeah.
And like literally the scene where Fry tells Leela he loves her. And like, he's like, I didn't know how to say it before. And Leela's like, wait a second. And that's when she realizes that they're about to get rid of all the worms. And that's what's making him, smarter and better. After they go to the movies, Nibbler and Leela are sitting at that same cafe talking about the movie. So they do all these small little details to like, that's like drawing it back to Parasite's Lost without it being like such an overt follow up. Okay. I loved when they went. So first of all, I like when they go to the movie, it's Quizblorg Quizblorg, which is a reference to Raging Bender when they go to the movies. That's the movie Leela wants to watch. She wants to watch Quizblorg Quizblorg. I think it's a sequel to Quizblorg Quizblorg, but, and then in that episode, she wants to see it. And Amy's just like, I hate movies with subtitles. And so like, that's actually like directly following up that thing where Leela's like, I want to see this movie. And everyone else is like, nah, I don't want to watch movies with subtitles. And Nibbler's like, I'll go see that. You know? So it's like, it was like a small throwaway thing before.
That's good. I like that.
Did you translate the alienese subtitles from the movie?
I did not. Did you?
I did.
Sure did. What did they say?
Okay, so it's funny because they show two. In the first one, they show it and then the audience cries. And then they show another one and the audience laughs. But the first one says laughter and then they cry. And the second one says sorrow and then they laugh.
That's funny.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. I also liked that the Quizborg was the winner of the Palme d'Or knob. Did you notice that on the marquee?
That's funny. I like there's that little word puzzle cube thing that Leela and Nibbler do.
I was not smart enough to understand that. I was trying to follow that. I was like, oh man, this is cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting how I think they obviously did it to, I think they did it to add more stakes and to also for the Dune spice to affect people more. But in the first one, when they shrink down, they have like the robot surrogate bodies. Like they basically
shit. You're right. Yeah.
And in this one, they literally shrink. They use like a real shrinking ray. I think it's, you know, they wanted to add stakes. They wanted it to be dangerous in there. And also, like, they wanted them to trip balls on that Dune Spice stuff. So you can't do that if you're a robot. But man, there's one moment in that shrinking sequence that kills me. I think, you know, the return of
the man, yeah, witch.
The man witch.
The man witch.
I think the way they timed that joke is so perfect, because it's just him at the microwave and it shrinks the microwave and then he opens it. My man witch. Not worried about the microwave. It's the man witch. I like that a lot. I thought that was super funny.
To be honest, now that I'm like really thinking about it, put myself in Hermes's shoes. Imagine you're at work and you heat up your lunch and then the shit is just shrinks. It's like, this is your lunch at work. Are you shitting me? Oh man, that would ruin me.
That would be very frustrating.
Poor guy.
Poor Hermes. Poor Hermes.
I do like the worms becoming one big worm. I thought that was creative. Cool. Yeah,
yep.
I like that a lot.
I like that a lot. Do you think people are going to be mad that they used ivermectin?
What?
Do you know what ivermectin is? It's that's the dewormer. Okay, so like the reason ivermectin was in the news so much was because people were taking it as a COVID preventative or like a COVID treatment. And it's like literally it's a literal dewormer. Like, it's what it is. And people were starting to take it. And it was like really fucking up people's digestive tracts, because you should not take dewormer to treat COVID. And it was like before
the process.
It was before there was no vaccine yet. People were just like, people were going
but
nuts.
They're not. COVID isn't a parasite. What's the thought process?
I don't know, man. But.
Now that we know there's aliens for real, this gotta be the dumbest planet. It gotta be. Like, there's no way. Because what the fuck is going on?
But people were using it. And so, like, I don't know. I haven't really seen people complain about it yet, but like, I don't think they would have used the brand name ivermectin in the episode if that hadn't happened. You know what I mean?
But
they're also using it as a literal, they're using it as a literal dewormer in this episode. They're not using it as a, like, something you shouldn't be using, you know, like a COVID type thing. So I don't know. I could see people getting real mad at that, but also it's a dewormer. It's a literal dewormer. Okay. Oh man. Let's see, what else do we got here? You know what's so interesting? So this is a small tangent. There's he's using the shrink ray to shrink people, but he says that it was meant to grow people, right? It's like, and he changed it. He like went in and he changed it to shrink people. There's an ad for Futurama in Times Square. Like one of those big, crazy, trippy ads in Times Square. And people have taken videos of it. And it's literally of Bender getting shot by the ray and growing really large. That must be an episode coming up. It's not one I've seen. And they use the same shrink ray, but as a grow ray. We'll see what happens in that one. But they did that in the Anthology of Interest where he's giant. Like, oh, you should do it for real now. Yeah.
who's the real 6-ton?
Hold on. This is the third time in a row my headphones have turned off mid-episode for some reason. All right, now they're back.
You good?
Stupid. All right, they're back. Weird little fun little tease, I guess. What do you think about the trippy ass drug trip sequences?
I thought they were funny looking. There's one of them, the first one, Leela's mouth is like out here.
Yeah.
It's a funny angle, like of her head or whatever. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think a lot of it was a lot of I was wondering, like, okay, is this spice thing like this, like, is this like a Dune thing too, or is this like,
yes,
invented
it is
for the, okay,
it's that, that's know a straight up Dune thing. Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's like a major, major, major part of Dune is the spice. Word, it's word. Like the primary part of Dune is the spice. It's like the resource that they're fighting over, basically, in a oh, lot word of ways. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Okay, Bender's tap dancing makes a return after Stenchability. That's
tap dancing does return.
Yep. He's got very a unique official. He's got some unique feet that he wears this time.
Mm-hmm.
There's some cool stuff in there, like when they're fighting the worms. I love how Bender attaches the super soaker to his hand and then like sprinkler sprays all of them. Mm-hmm. I thought that was visually pretty cool.
Right, right.
Oh, going back to the trip sequences, they are cool. I really like the one that I really like is the one when Nibbler is like talking about the whole web of parasitic life in the litter box or whatever, and they're all like circled up and it's like rotating. That's the visual I like the best in this episode. And there are some cool, like, Leela's crazy trip face is neat. I will say though, Disenchantment does trip sequences almost every season, and they're all so freaking good that I was like watching this one, I was like, this leaves a little bit to be desired.
I've definitely seen cooler and funnier trip sequences. Like, you know, you can't, I think you peak at like Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Well, that thing is fucking
that,
crazy.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But yeah, they like you said Disenchantment does them every year. BoJack used to do them every year.
That's true. They do a lot of them. That's right.
Yeah. I think at a certain point you could stop calling it every year, but at one point it was dead ass every year.
Yeah. Yeah. They did it. Yes.
Yeah.
At least
there's there's the Charlie Brown thing in the first year.
Right.
With Diane.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. Yeah. They do a few of them for sure. Season 5 does the whole like blackout thing. Season 3 does the big whole blackout thing. Okay. Season 5, that show's great. We got to talk about BoJack more on the pod.
That's my shit, yo.
Yeah, I can't believe we haven't yet.
They've been throwing that clip around from Xerox of a Xerox.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about that for a minute. there's lots of clips they've been throwing around. I don't know. It's weird to me. Like, it's nice to see people appreciating that episode. That episode's so fucking good. I keep getting tagged in a lot of them being like, it was Johnny's video that really made me realize what a piece of shit BoJack is. I don't know entirely how I feel about that being the reaction, because like, I mean, like, I thought the show did a pretty good job making him look like a piece
That's true. And, well, how were you consuming this show if you didn't know he was a fucking
piece
of shit?
And I don't know. I guess I thought, like, I mean, that video, I definitely go pretty hard towards BoJack, and like, and I, it's the ending beat of that video is specifically to like really try to point out how selfish that was. But I don't know, man. Like, it's so interesting to see all these people who love the show, and so many of these comments are just like, they really just made a show who's a genuine piece of shit. No one could ever cheer for this character. Everyone must hate him. And I'm like, I don't know if that's how people feel about this show.
Right,
like,
yeah.
I think everyone recognizes that he's a bad person.
He's a bad person. But
I think the whole point of the show is, it feels to me like the whole point of the show is him reconciling with that. You know what I mean? It's like, like, I don't know. It's so interesting for me. Are people really watching the show just to be like, oh, can't wait to see his downfall? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Or are we, because when I watch the show, I think the line it walks so fucking well is, this guy is a huge piece of shit and he's paying for his own actions, but he's also someone who is actively trying to improve himself by the end. You know what I mean? Like he's someone who is like, who has come to terms with his own shittiness and actively tries to rectify it. And I feel like the end of the show is basically saying like, yeah, it's never too late to keep trying to be a good person, even if like you're only doing that for yourself, you know?
Right. Yeah. Cause at that point it's like, for most of the show, he's damaging every relationship he has with the people he cares about. And like, he's constantly trying to repair that until the end where he practically has none of them. And in that, like, I think the show would fail if after all of that, he loses everyone and he's still shitty. But the thing is like, he loses everyone and he's like, I gotta be better regardless. Cause I can't keep doing this regardless. Even though I don't have anyone else, I gotta figure this shit out.
Exactly.
I can't do the same shit I'm doing the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like, I don't know, man, it's like, because I think the incredible thing they do is that by the end of season 6, part 1, he has improved so drastically, and he has improved his relationships with everyone and started to try to make up for all of his shortcomings with his friends and all of his failures with his friends so pointedly that you are like, you want him to keep staying on that path and be better. You know what I mean? You're just like, is the world going to be better if BoJack stays this person, or if he is canceled and he falls down from grace because of all of the things he's done in the past? You know what I mean? Like that's, I think that's like the really interesting question they ask. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I just like, I think that show is so nuanced, and it's like, I love seeing people sharing clips they love of the show, but it is weird for me to people just be like, man, the show is great because he's a piece of shit and that's it. You know what I mean?
Right. But yeah. I can't understand the sentiment, right? Because like, there's a lot of, okay. Let's talk. I'm, for example, right? Like Rick and Morty, right? Like, Rick isn't really a good person, but like he still like wins consistently. He doesn't necessarily pay for like for how he treats the people around him. Yes. And I think there's a lot of shows that are like that, and I think it's really cathartic for people to see BoJack being the exact same as these characters, but he's never excused for it. He never gets away with it. Even when you think he gets away with it and you think he fixes himself, the shit comes right back and it's like, no, you got to deal with it.
That is exactly, but like that's why the presentation of that last season is so perfect, because it then makes you reconcile as a viewer with that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you're like, oh man, like especially by the end of season 5, you're just like, wow, no coming back for BoJack. Like Jesus Christ.
And yeah, then, it's over.
and then he like so thoroughly improves himself as a person,
you love it.
Yes, you love it. And not only do you see him improve himself as a person, but through his improved relationships with his loved ones, he improves their lives. Every one of them, every one of their lives begins to improve because he starts to treat them better as friends. And so that's why I think that's such a brilliant show, is because it makes you as the viewer have to reconcile these two things in your head. And I feel like I don't know. I just feel like the nuance of that is getting a little lost in some of this discussion, you know,
when you just focus on, when you just focus on Buddy being like a piece of shit. Cause that's all the analysis that I was reading was just, it was like, yo man, bro was vile. He did this, that, whatever. And like, for sure. He definitely did all that shit. And he was vile. But I do think that, I don't know, anytime the show comes up, it always does kind of, this is the least it's ever annoyed me there's been consistent talk about it.
But I am frustrated that there's such a lack. It's like, it's either it's either one full side or the other. You know what I mean? I'm just like, where's, right. I don't know. I just wish that, I just think the show deserves a little bit more of a nuanced discussion than it gets. Maybe it deserves more of a nuanced discussion than Twitter can allow.
For yes. Yes. That's what video essays are for, and podcasts and shit like that. Cause they're not going to do that shit up there. BoJack is my favorite show ever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I've said that before, but it's my favorite show ever. I hear people all the time saying, like, yeah, I can't rewatch it. It's so funny. Like, I think the big plot points and like a lot of the like fucked up stuff that happens makes people forget how relentlessly funny of a cartoon that is. And that's why I could keep watching. That's why I could like watch it over and over again. It's because it's funny. Like, you know what I mean? It's still really funny. And it's deep, it's complex. That's my shit.
Maybe I'm like maybe due for a rewatch at some point here. That's though I haven't rewatched it enough. Great show. All right, good little show. BoJack tangent. We really should talk about that show on the pod. And I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will at some point. Okay, where were we? Let's talk about some other jokes in here. I feel like that was a classic Bender line. So when the Beetle uses the Pounder to like summon to try and like throw off the sandworm or whatever, that's a thing from Dune also. He calls it a Pounder, and it starts. And I felt like a classic Bender line to be like, my grandfather was a Pounder.
Oh yeah, it's a classic. Yeah, Bender. Yeah,
pretty
for sure.
Classic. And then I guess that makes me a Quarter Pounder. That's pretty funny.
That's so funny. Yeah. Okay, that's stupid. That's such a stupid. Okay, yeah, whatever.
It's a stupid joke. That's funny. But I like how the big resolution to this episode is pretty like it's pretty Futurama-y in its scientific specificity of it being like it being about this parasitic circle of life. That's even though it's gross because it's all in a litter box, but. I liked that was kind of the resolution is Nibbler's just like, look, I can't, if I, trying to save myself will basically eliminate like an entire ecosystem, a whole world here. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I can't be that selfish and do that. And so it's just my duty to be a part of that circle of life and to just allow them to eat my brain.
Right. But is this like a, oh, go ahead. You can ask me. What are you gonna
no,
ask
no, no. You do that first, and then I'll okay. ask you the question I had.
I was gonna ask: Is this like a? Because when Nibbler said all of that stuff, right? I was like, okay, that's really interesting that they're going for that. But then at the end of the episode, Leela just kind of says like, you got to draw the line somewhere, and then like they just kind of start killing all of the other parasites. Yeah. And I was wondering, is this because I was in my head? I'm like, what is it like? It's pretentious as fuck, but like, what is this like about essentially? Right. Because the first one, you think of the first one, it's like, okay, I can't let Fry like die just because I like this version of him. Like, this is very selfish of me. Like, and that's internally, emotionally, like that's what the story is about. Like,
right.
Subtext wise, whatever. But here I'm not sure. And I think the only thing I can think of is it like a intrusive species thing? Like sometimes there's things that you legitimately got to get rid of kind of thing.
Well, that's what I thought. Like, I mean, that's what the whole thing about the parasites is in the first place. I don't know. Yeah. I guess I feel like they maybe delivered it a little clumsily there, but I did see it that way where they're like, they're an intrusive parasite because they were changing how the worms themselves operated. You know what I mean? Like they improved Fry and now they're making Nibbler dumber. And so they're not operating the way that they're supposed to operate because of these other sub parasites. Right. But I do think it begs the question as to what is the better ending? Cause I do like that. I think there's some funny stuff in there. But part of me is like, damn, they should have gone with the Nibbler stays dumb and becomes their house pet ending.
I agree. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree that, first of all, if they do that, this has the potential to be even more emotional than the second episode.
I know.
If that's where they decided to go, this could have been such a fucking gut punch.
I know.
I would have ate that. I would have ate that shit up for sure.
I know. Same. And you know what? It's like they barely use Nibbler as his intelligent Niblonian stuff anymore. Anyways,
mm-hmm. They do that. They do it here. It's a recurring gag in the Comedy Central room where he's like, "Y'all always forget I can talk." Like, you know what yes. I mean? Like. The joke is that because he doesn't do it often.
Because he never does it. And they keep and they always walk him like he's a pet still. Like they just treat him like a pet anyways.
Right.
Which is funny, but like, yeah, I don't know. I kinda wish they had done that. And you know what? Like, look, if you need to use Nibbler's intelligence later in a Niblonian focused storyline, it's Futurama. They could write whatever out they need to restore his intelligence. The Niblonians themselves could have some technology to restore his intelligence. There's a million things they could have done. But I think this episode would have been a more effective gut punch if they had really just let that play out. I think that would have been the move. I wish they had done it. I really wish they had. Yeah.
The only issue I can think of that you would run into if they were to do it that way is exactly what we were talking about. They don't really use Nibbler talking anyway. So it's like you're getting rid of this thing that we haven't even gotten to see the full potential of just yet. So it's like, I don't know. But at the same time, I think it just would have enhanced the story emotionally.
You know what this episode made me wish they had done? Because I liked seeing Leela and Nibbler's relationship as equals intelligence-wise. Or, you know, like at least more comparable. Someone that Leela can actually talk to versus some of her coworkers.
It's like and, Slacker Cats.
Yes.
Their
right.
relationship is like Slacker Cats.
The thing is that they never showed that. They just keep treating him like a pet. And that's why, even the joke of her not remembering Nibbler can talk at the beginning, to me, undermines that plot point. The whole relationship is contingent on her feeling like she needs the smart version of Nibbler as her friend, and in this episode she forgot he can do that. know what I mean?
Before that the episode doesn't like hone in and focus on like, okay, when Leela comes out and asks who wants to come with her to the movie, that like, and everybody says no, there isn't like a moment where Leela's like, damn, why is nobody around me smart? Like, you know what I mean? There isn't like anything like that. Nibbler immediately just goes like, oh yeah, I'll pull up. So there isn't, you don't even think that Leela has the internal, like, this is the only person I can talk to.
Right. It's more like, oh, either. I can't, none of these people want to see a cool movie with me.
Right.
And he's just like, all right, let's do it.
Right.
So I'm torn on the ending. I still like how they resolved it, even though I just think it would have been a better ending if they had leaned into it and Nibbler stayed dumb. I think that would have been the move. I don't know if maybe they have a story coming up where he needs to
be smart.
Maybe there's something going on there, but I just feel like it could have been a really good, strong emotional ending, and it was a little undermined, a little undercut. But I hope we see them as like friends more. I want to see that more, you know,
yeah,
like rather than just being a pet, just like they're friends. They should be friends. They should just be hanging out.
I agree.
Okay.
We could talk about the new school punching up joke. They got a new one.
Dude, I did want to just, one. I was just going to bring that up. I hate that joke. I hate that joke. Well, I hate it. I hate it not because, not only, look, however you feel. There's the joke in here. The joke we're talking about is when Nibbler's he's getting dumber. He says he can't even predict the ending of an M. Night Shyamalan movie anymore. Right. which I just think is a bad joke on every level. Because A, making fun of Shyamalan is like 15-year-old hacky.
That shit is old. That was my thing. Is that was my thing about it. It's like this old ass dinosaur joke that every adult cartoon has done in some way, shape, or form.
But I also just think it's a bad Shyamalan joke. Like Shyamalan's issue isn't that his endings are predictable.
It's that he does twists.
It's that he does twists that are sometimes so unpredictable that they come so far out of left field they piss people off.
That's true.
It's genuinely the opposite of his problem. And right. So like, and plus I just think I've come so far around on M. Night Shyamalan where I'm just like so happy a filmmaker like that exists who's unabashedly going to be doing his own shit. You know what I mean? Like so many movies are just feel like predictable and his don't. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I haven't seen Knock at the Cabin. I really want to watch it. But I think Old is super underrated. I think Old is a sick movie.
I have not seen Old.
Dude, you should see Old. What they put those characters through is it's great. I heard someone else say this, which I think is apt, is old felt like a fucking Twilight Zone episode. It felt like a modern Twilight Zone episode. It was like the closest we'll get to a modern Twilight Zone episode, in my opinion. And like, yeah, it has a crazy, weird, silly Shyamalan twist at the end. But like, I don't think that I think what's frustrating is when people once a twist happens in a Shyamalan movie, they judge the movie on the twist. And I'm like, did you not feel anything while experiencing the rest of this movie? Like whether or not you think that's an effective explanation, I don't think that matters. Like if you're only watching it for the explanation, if you're only watching the movie to find out why are these people getting old on the beach, you're missing the point. And the point is that they're getting old on the beach and they have to live out their lives in a few fucking hours. that is the drama that drives that movie. And it's so effective. And so like, I think so many people saw the twist and are just like, I don't like that twist. And I'm like, okay, but did you like the rest?
That's my thing about a lot of shit too, is like, I feel like if I enjoyed the other 40 minutes of Lightyear, I wouldn't give a fuck about that twist. But guess what? I didn't. So like, that's why I feel that way. But that's me taking the movie in totality. I think that happens a lot. And I think sometimes you can't really get away from it. If you're watching something and like you think it's cool, and then like the end happens and then it pisses you off and when you walk out the theater, you're going to be thinking about that ending. Somebody going to ask you how the movie was. I'm like, man, that shit ended on some bullshit. And then when you watch it a second time, you're like, oh, wait, I like the first hour and 30 minutes of this.
Right.
And I completely forgot because I was so mad about this ending. I feel you. I feel you. I do.
Yeah, man. I got to watch Knock at the Cabin. The performances look really good.
I don't know how many M. Night Shyamalan movies I've seen. All I know is that he wrote Stuart Little. As far as my brain power goes.
That's true. I think I haven't seen all his movies. I missed a lot in the middle. I love Sixth Sense is a perfect movie. Like that's a fucking great movie. I think Unbreakable is sick, great movie. And I think Signs, underrated. Signs fucking rules. Signs is a great movie. I think anyone who hates Signs is it's another one where they're judging it based on the like resolution and twist at the end. And I'm like, are you missing the whole movie? You're missing the whole movie.
I've heard good things about Signs.
Right. We should watch some Shyamalans together. We should do that. He had his whole period in the middle. I feel like I want to revisit the ones that I didn't like. I mean, the one that I remember watching in the theater and being just baffled by was Lady in the Water. That movie is nuts. Insane movie. But it seems like he's had a real renaissance recently, starting with like Split, right?
People like Split, right?
People love Split, but also, okay, I won't explain it to anyone who hasn't seen it, but there's like, people really like Split as a movie, and then there's something that he does in how his twist with that like kind of broke people's brains. And so like, there's more going on with that with his movies. Okay. But I want to revisit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Glass. Well, Glass is the follow-up to Split. And
Is it like a... Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah. What the fuck? Wait. What's going on? Is it... So
I don't want to say it for people who don't know. I don't want to spoil
I'll shut up.
I'll spoil it for you after. I'll spoil it for you after the after
wait,
the pod.
So it's... That's crazy. He wowed. Yeah, I didn't know he did that. Okay.
It's crazy. I don't know. I'm pro Shyamalan. I'm a pro.
How did he get the rights to it, Little?
I don't know.
What happened?
That was a good question.
What happened?
Good question. But you know what? He self-funds. Like, people keep saying bullshit. Like, why do we keep letting M. Night Shyamalan make movies? He self-funds almost all of his own movies. He was like, he had a whole career downturn where people wouldn't hire him anymore, and he like put up all his own money and mortgaged his house to make another movie, and that movie was like the big turn back for his career. Like, we've got a guy who just bets on himself, and he bets on his own stuff, and he has his own style, and he has his own thing. And look, if you don't like that thing, I think that's fine, but that's what we need more of in film. We need more people with unique styles and unique point of views, and you just that have their own thing. I don't want all movies to feel the fucking same, you know? And so
I get you.
I would rather have a movie that half the people fucking hate and half the people are like, yeah, that's my shit, than like a bunch of movies but everyone is just like, yeah, that was fine. You know what I mean?
You know,
that
was good. The best way I could describe it is, what was that? Was it The Post? What was that Spielberg movie that came out not too long ago?
Yeah, The Post.
And it had that great cast, and everybody saw it, and I'd never seen anything like that before. Everybody was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, of course it's good. Duh. Like, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't even like an emotional, like, yo, that was my shit. Yeah. Like, I loved it. He did this and did that. It's like, man, these people make good movies. It was just a good fucking, like, you know what I mean? And I was like, wow, that's so...
Well, that's the thing, is when you're on that level, when you're on a level like Spielberg, like the bar is great. Like, the bar is like the bar that you have set is, this has got to be great or else people will say it's bad. You know what I mean? And so he doesn't really make he doesn't make many bad movies. I mean, I was thinking about this a lot recently because I went to see that new Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny. And I rewatched all four of the other Indiana Jones, all directed by Spielberg. But I watched Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny pretty much back to back. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a movie that is hated. A lot of people find Dial of Destiny better. Watching them back to back, I just don't think it could have been more fucking obvious what Steven Spielberg brings to the table when directing one of those movies. And that is that he directs the shit out of it, because Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has problems, but oh my God, I think I would choose to watch Crystal Skull over Dial of Destiny almost any day. Mm-hmm. And it's not because Dial of Destiny is an interesting story and it does some stuff I like. And I don't even, I think James Mangold is a good director. He's directed some shit I love, but oh my God, every action sequence felt so flat to me. There's an opening in Crystal Skull. The opening sequence is just all these kids, these teenagers in the 50s in a car, and they're weaving their car in and out of these military vehicles. And it's literally just the opening to show the military vehicles go into this base and start the movie. It's not even a story related sequence. And he directs the fuck out of it, to the point where I think about how dynamically shot that sequence is, and I'm like, that shot, that opening sequence that means nothing to the story, is better shot than anything in Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And I don't know, man. Like, I really fucking wish he directed that last movie, because the story is cool and I think it could have been fucking great.
I thought he did until like 2 months ago, and then I found out he didn't, and I was like, I don't know if I want to see that shit.
And he was supposed to. And then I don't know, there's the whole opening sequence of Dial Destiny takes place in the 30s with like de-aged Indy. And like, I just think it all looks like shit.
Does like, it really?
It just looks bad, man. Like the DH looks okay. But I think the sequences are so dark and boring. Like, there's a whole sequence where they're on a fucking train. Like it's a chase on top of a train. And I'm just like, why is this so boring? They are like, why are teenagers weaving a car in and out of like military vehicles more exciting than Indiana Jones fighting a Nazi on top of a train? Why? Right. Like, and I just think that speaks entirely to what Spielberg brings to the table with that kind of shit. He directs the hell out of everything he does.
Did you ever I think one of his first directing jobs was I think like the pilot to Columbo. I've only seen the first shot.
I watched the shit.
Oh yeah, you did watch this. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah, you did watch the shit out Columbo.
Columbo Stan.
I've only seen the first shot of that pilot, and that first shot tells you that Spielberg did it. It like comes out of the window, and like you see his like whole office, and I was like, this is
wild. Like before he was doing movies, man. Yeah. Good shit.
He will direct the shit out something.
Great show. Hold on. Okay. Cool.
But this is saying all this to say, just back off M. Night, man. Cut this shit out.
Dude, I know. I mean, it's just at this point. I mean, like, look, I will never forgive him for Last Airbender, but.
Yeah, that's your shit.
You
live
hate,
and breathe that franchise.
Look, I never watched that movie. You know what's so funny? This is actually insane. I don't know if I've ever admitted this on the podcast, but I didn't grow up with Last Airbender. I'm older. That show, when it started airing, I was kind of aging out of Nickelodeon. I had always been told by my uncle, who watched it with his kids who are younger than me, that it was great and I should watch it. And I was like, okay, sure. It wasn't until the movie was coming out, that The Last Airbender was coming out, that I was like, oh, okay, M. Night's doing this movie version of Last Airbender. Maybe I should, like, in anticipation of the movie, I'll check out the show. And that's how I became obsessed with the show, is watching the show because M. Night's movie was coming out. And then, because of the reaction, I never fucking watched the movie until, like, 3 years ago. It was mid-pandemic. And when I lived with my roommate still, and we were like, well, what are we going to do today? I was like, let's fucking watch Last Airbender. I've never seen it. And that movie disappointed me in ways I never anticipated it could have. It was such, so differently a piece of shit than I thought it would be. I anticipated certain ways that it would suck, but it just sucked so much worse in every other way. And you know what? Not excited about the live action Netflix show. Sorry, not excited, man, about it. I'm going to watch fuck out of it, but I'm not excited.
I've seen a couple episodes of the first season when it was airing, back when it was airing. But like, I never got attached to the show. I never like watched the whole thing or anything like that. I was in like eighth grade, I think, when the movie came out. Saying that to say, I came in school the next day, my fucking teacher was talking. She stopped the lesson to rant about what M. Night did to this cartoon that she liked. You know what I mean? And that was like nowadays where stuff like that is normal and people have these kind of like media discussions or whatever. But back then it kind of broke my brain. I'm like, this is my teacher. Like, I thought I was supposed to be watching this shit. You know, I thought it was cool that she cared that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, though, I love that show. I love that show, that franchise so much. I also love Korra, and honestly, the best thing that came out of them doing this new Netflix adaptation is that Brian and Mike, the creators, quit and formed Avatar Studios, and now we're going to get a fuck ton of new animated Avatar content. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be more stoked about it. God, I love that dumb franchise so much. I don't know, man. I know it's not your thing because it's action based, but I do think once you, I feel like if you really gave it a shot, because the characters are so fucking good.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's
what
funny.
I've noticed it's funny.
Like it is, the characters are incredible. The character dynamics and relationships are amazing, and it's funny. I think you would like really dig it. And then also, you know, it really does just have the sickest fucking action sequences. Like I feel like even you would appreciate them. You know?
Yeah, I don't think that's too far off from what I've heard people talk about the show. It's always been like a character thing. Even though, like I said, I've only seen a few episodes of the show. One of those is the one where they see Aang for the first time and Buddy like gets foam at the mouth and faints. That's the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Yep.
So I don't even doubt that the cartoon is funny. You know what I mean? It's just kind of something about, I don't know. Was it like four seasons of it? I think
of the original show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three seasons, but they're like 20 episode seasons. Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty long.
This is three seasons, and yeah, it's one of those ones where like I'll get comments of people saying like, "Bro, you know, you gotta talk about Avatar, right, bro?" And it's like, y'all want to hear me talk about this cartoon I didn't watch? Like, I don't know, you know what I mean? But I do think it'd be cool to like finally watch it,
dude.
Oh,
it is funny that people sometimes, audience members, can't they can't wrap their head around like that we're here to talk about things we like or things that we want to talk about.
Right.
And there's just like people begging me to talk about something I've never cared about and never will. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you want to hear someone validate your feelings on this. I'm not the
because
person
they're used
that.
To you. They're used to you validating their feelings on everything else. Right.
Right.
So
right.
Then it's like, oh, okay, well, this, like, what else do I love? Let me ask him to do this other thing that I love, because like he loves everything else that I love. So he'll probably, it's like, you know, it's not true. When I was a teenager, I'll watch people and I would find out that they were doing a video on something that I really loved, and I'll get so excited for it, and I'll watch the video and I'll be like, oh, so like not only do you like not like this, I also kind of feel like as not being a fan of it, you kind of missed the point a little bit. And I don't want to do that. I get terrified sometimes talking about shows that like I didn't like have a big connection to. Like as told by Ginger, when I did that years ago, like, and I was like being critical of certain episodes when I was writing it, I'd like no bull. That's how I found Patricia, Old School Lane, because I was like literally looking up fan reactions to certain episodes to be like, I don't want to like, am I wilding? Like, am I being mean? I don't want to like, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
It is funny. Like, sometimes it feels like there's no winning. Like, talking about these new Futuramas, Ponyo, you got to stop that. Sorry, stop. All right.
It'd be like that.
You done? Great.
Tony's sleep.
Wow, Tony's being good. Look at my. Yeah. These guys are being nuisances. But what I was saying is, like, even talking about these new Futurama episodes on my channel, I'm a positive, optimistic person about stuff. I don't make many videos where I just shit on things. You know what I mean? Like, look, if there's something I fucking hate, I'm almost certainly not going to make a video about it.
I don't remember the last time you did that.
I think the closest I got is like in my Spider-Man video where I talk about all of the live action movies. I shit on Spider-Man 3 because that movie pisses me
off.
But talking about Futurama, I'm being positive about it because I'm talking about the things I like about it. I'm being real and critical of things that I don't love about it. And I'm pretty straight up in most of it where I'm just like, look, I think Futurama is, I think these episodes are fine. I'm like, I like them. I don't love them. I don't hate them. I think they're fine. And I get people saying, dude, you're too fucking positive on the show. Can't believe it feels like you're afraid to be critical. And I've got people who are like, God, you're so fucking negative about this show. And I'm like, what am I? Who am I?
Yeah, who am I, guys?
I'm Schrodinger's
Pick
critic,
one.
Bro. Yeah.
Pick a struggle, bro. Please. Let me know.
It's just funny. Depends on your point of view. Look, I don't know, man. I'm just telling you how I feel about this shit. It's hard for me to hate Futurama. It's hard for me to hate an episode of Futurama. I haven't hated any of these episodes of Futurama. If you listen to the podcast, you know there's a fuck ton of episodes in the Comedy Central era that I hate and I actively hated. Hamlet, don't go back there. My cat's trying to go behind my TV, my computer now. Come here.
Oh, that shit gonna fall over.
No, there's a lot of space behind there. He spends a lot of time back there, but I don't want him to do it while we're. You know, look at the pod.
Hey, bud.
He's fluffy. Hey, bud. He's a good cat. All right. There you go, bud. Yeah, so I don't know. It's like, it can be a struggle sometimes. Like, I'm just trying to talk. Okay, dude. but it can be a struggle to talk about these and just be genuine, and people think I'm not being genuine. You know what I mean?
Right, or for sure.
Or if I'm being too much this or not enough this or too much that. And, you know, I don't know, man. I dislike Futurama and I like talking about it. And even in these episodes that I don't love, I like to talk about them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like talking about how this episode parallels Parasite's Lost, even if I don't think it remotely lived up to Parasite's Lost. You know what I mean?
Right.
And how I appreciate the ways it decided to do a follow-up to that episode. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's just it's tough. It could be tough. Be tough out here.
Yeah, the nuance is important. No, I just think that's the in everything. Like bringing it back to this episode, like the in the joke that we started talking about. It's like that's really like what it boils down to. It's like there's not you're like ignoring the nuance of the rest of the film or the rest of his films in general, M. Night's films in general, to make this joke, dismissing the twist part. You know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know, dude. This is just how it is, man.
right.
This is just how it is.
You got any other thoughts on this one before we wrap it up?
Okay. First of all, this is the only episode I've watched on Hulu with ads. This episode has like 4 fucking act breaks. I caught an ad like 3 or 4 times. I was really confused.
That's so annoying.
and a little Bart doll. Nibbler is chewing on a Bart doll at the end.
Yes, I know. And it's the first it's like the first overt Simpsons reference we've gotten in a while.
No, is there any? Oh,
I think the last one I remember is Bender asking for another Simpsons movie.
Right.
But I don't think we've visually seen a Simpson in Futurama since like Fish, big piece of garbage. I think.
Nah, you know what? After that, there's the when they're in the sewer. There's that balloon, and it has Bart's. Like,
oh, it's got part of Bart. It's got part of Bart from the. Yeah, it's like an amalgamation of all of the other dead Macy's Day Parade balloons, and
it is like
Bart
John Arbuckle's forehead. Yeah, that's
true.
A funny bit.
That's true. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know. I like this one. I don't love this one. I think I like it better than last week's. But it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I do. But it's like they're similar. I think so far it's a toss up between the first two for which one I like more, mostly because one is funny and one is emotional. And I'm like, all right, well, what outweighs the other for me right now? is one more emotional than the other is funny funny than the other is emotional. And then the last two have been pretty decent middle of the road Futuramas for me. I've only seen 2 more of what we've got coming up. I'm so excited to watch new ones again. I'm like, I watched all these so fast that I'm like, can't wait to fucking watch a new episode.
Catch some new Futurama.
Next week's does a lot of, there's a lot to talk about in next week's. And then the week after is the one that I liked the most, I think, out of these 6. And so that's me personally. I think that's a fun episode. And then, but yeah, next week has like a lot of, there's at least a lot to talk about. It's I'm excited to rewatch it. It's been a couple weeks since I've rewatched it. So
word.
Cool. You want to wrap it up? Got anything to plug?
Yeah. like I said, today's Indie Animation Day. There is a live stream over on my friend Jacqueline's channel, where me and a bunch of indie creators will be like talking about our projects or whatever. And I'm pretty sure that'll just be up after this. Like, you could find that after this episode if you want to hear that. And yeah, dude, support cartoons, good vibes only. There's my plug.
Hell yeah. Great. Go support cartoons. Go check out our videos. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm going to take a nap, I decided.
Okay.
I think I'm going to do that. We'll see. Oh, I got to make these assets for our episode. I could probably do that later. I think I'm going to like lay down, watch Solar Opposites, and take a little nap. New Solar Opposites has been good.
Yeah.
You watch that show?
Nah. Remember, you had to explain to me what the wall was.
Bro, you should watch it. I think you'd like it.
You know, Blake, you know Blake, right?
Yeah, of course.
Blake, we make fun of him on a podcast for it because he comes on a podcast.
Like, yo, y'all should watch Solar Opposites. I think it's a good show.
It is a good show. It's a fucking good show. I bet it is. Better.
It's just funny because it's Blake.
I think you would I think you would like the way it's the way it's sitcom-y. Like, it's because it's like it's just like your it's just aliens trying to be people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's it's pretty straightforward. And then it's got all these crazy sub stories like The Wall. And now they have a new one that takes place in space called Silver Cops. And it's nuts. great show. Good show. Quality Morty. Show. Better than Rick and Morty. Don't at me. And all right, cool. I guess with that, I want to thank Carrie Feek for our amazing artwork. I want to thank Jake Dutron for that earworm of a theme song. I want to thank Michael Yunez for executive producing and editing the podcast, as well as co-hosting our After Dark episodes, which we need to get back on top of. We will. We're going to do it. We're going to get back in there. I also want to thank Tunerific Tariq for co-hosting the show with me. I also want to thank all of you for listening and watching and subscribing and rating and reviewing and potentially paying for our Patreon if you're a cursed one. You're all great. You're the reason we do this. We love you so much, but also, in addition to that, f*** you very much.